keep you excited a little bit and start off with see some videos, a couple of videos. But I want to tell the story of TED a little bit, and then I want you to look at a TED video, a TED talk that has been made into anime. But there are two groups like this. One is called TED.com, which is Technology Education Design.com. And the other is called PopTech.com. Now, I've never spoken to TED, but I was the first religion speaker at this one called PopTech. And they meet in Camden, Maine in the fall at the height of leaf beeper season. So it's absolutely beautiful. You can see some of the leaves in the background. And they meet in a little community center. It's 500 seats. What they do is, again, you get 18 minutes up on the stage to tell what you're interested in and working in at that minute. And it starts on Thursday night with a kind of a supper, a cocktail hour. And it concludes Saturday night. So basically, it's all day Friday, all day Saturday, with kind of a get-to-know-each-other session on Thursday night. And So I was asked to come and speak, but I was told I would be the first religion speaker, so to watch it. Didn't know exactly what that meant. But my oldest son at the time was finishing up his PhD in biology, immunology, toxicology at the University of Michigan. So I said to him, "Do you want to go with me?" And he said, "Yeah, I'd love to." So the two of us went, and I didn't have to pay for my ticket, but I had to pay for his ticket, which was $1,500. Now, that $1,500 got you one thing, and that's a seat. You got no food, you got no hotel, you got nothing but a seat. And that Thursday night kind of cocktail hour, which got you, you had to pay for the drinks, but you got the nuts. Okay. So you got $1,500, I just want to make sure. So now, beyond top of that, you had to pay for your food, you had to pay for your hotel. This is the height of leave you're receiving, so the hotels are very expensive. You had to fly there. So, of course, I had to pay his way to fly there. I had to buy him a ticket. I didn't have to buy one, but we had a great time. And I learned a lot, he learned a lot, it was father-son bonding time. So the next year, I said, "You know, you want to go back?" And he said, "I'd love to go back." And now he now has his PhD and has a job where he's already making more than I make. But guess what? Yeah. Said, "But this year the tickets are $2,000. And I had to pay for my ticket because I'm not speaking this year. So $2,000, plus plane fare. Great time. We had a hotel where they actually webcast it into the hotel. So you could either go take your seat or just stay in the hotel and watch it, which we did both. You know. Third year. You want to go back? Oh, I'd love to go back. It is now $3,000. And I said, "Well, you're going to pay for your ticket there this year?" "Oh, sorry, Dad, I can't." You know. By the way, when do you stop paying for your kids? So have you found a date where...
My parents quit when I was 7. Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, so now it's $3,000 his ticket, $3,000 for my ticket, plane fare, I can't afford it. So, I said, "I'm sorry." He said, "Well, I'm sorry." Okay. So, now I tell you this story because TED now is $5,000 a ticket. Wow. In other words, I don't know what PopTech is, but it's not, I think it's more like $4,500. But people are now paying, and they sell out every year, $5,000 to get a ticket that gets you a C. Remember, it gets you no food, you know, maybe access to some people that you want to get their book signed, but, and a few knocks, but that's all it gets you, $5,000. Now, here's the question I want to pose for you as we begin this afternoon, and before we look at this this TED Talk in animated form. Why are people willing to pay $5,000 for a ticket that gets you nothing but a seat to listen to these 18-minute presentations for a couple of days? You ready? Knowing full well that in a couple of months, everything you hear on stage will be posted on the internet for free. You see, there is a new content. There is a new content. Nobody in this world anymore is paying for information. The content is no longer the information. People are not paying $5,000 for information, but that information is posted for free. A couple months later. Why people are willing to pay $5,000 is for the experience of being there and the relationships that they engender while they're there. That's the new content. I fully expect in the future that people will not buy my books. You'll have to give the content away, but what they will buy is a relationship with me where, like here, where you can be up close, personal, ask questions, engage me. And so the books are in some ways a front, if you will, for the relationship. People will not, there's a new content, it is the relationship itself. Now, in this kind of a world, this ought to be so exciting for us, because guess what? That's our content. What we try to do, though, is make Jesus information. Principles, points, teachings even. No, the content is the person who invites us into that relationship. That's the new content. So this is why people are willing to pay the $5,000 for that new content, which is the relationship and the experience itself. I mean, the experience of actually being there when Jill Bolte Taylor held up the brain and celebrated. So you can tell the stories of, well, I was there when it happened, and you should see the place that just kind of gasped. But every one of those seats that you saw people sitting there, they're paying back then, it was probably like $3,500 to get a seat to watch that. But they knew it was going to be posted for free, so you could watch it. This has major implications for how we think. Well, everything from education to worship. In my arena, one of my primary arenas, the world of learning, we still have a model, an educational model, where we think people, students are there so that we can control their access to information. In other words, they are paying for us as a portal to their access to that information. And one of the hardest things in the world is for teachers, faculty, to come to grips with the fact that that world is over. These students do not need us anymore for access to information. They can get it a thousand different ways. See, that's the big jug, little mug approach. You're the little mug, I'm the big jug, and you're here so that I access the information, and your job is to catch my droppings. And however I want to let it out.
Please.
I'm starting to spray a little bit. The big jug, little mug approach to learning is over. Now, it is still resonant in our schools, in our churches. We still are building churches that look like factory models. We've got corridors and classrooms. This is as bad as you can get. This is the only country in the world that's still putting up telephone poles. We live in a wireless cable world, and we are still, you go to any place in the world, even South Africa, they've all put their, the only place in the world you can go, they're still putting up, because we're still putting telephone poles in our heads, in our minds, because we're still living in an industrial factory model mentality. We're doing that in worship, we're doing that in church, we're doing that in Sunday school. The whole model is not big joke, little book. The world in which we're living in is not one of access to information. You don't need me for access to information. What students need faculty for is not access, but process. How do I process the information that I don't need you to access? How do we turn that information into knowledge and knowledge into wisdom? Help me process it. And second, assess it. How do I assess what is good information and bad information? Because listen, the blessing of the internet is that it contains everything and everybody's an author. The curse of the internet is what? Everybody's an author and it contains everything. And so there's this leveling of thing. How do you know what I can trust? What I can't trust? How do I assess what's good information, what's bad information? So the whole issue of process, assess, has not been addressed in the whole learning model. Access, we still think, no, you come to me to get access to this information. And those days come. Now the person, I'm really excited because this summer I'm speaking with this person who has understood this the most, is a British kind of educational theorist. And he did a TED Talk, and his TED Talk they made into a Aras Animate, which is what we started today with. So I want you to see another one. I've seen this maybe 20 times, and every time it gets better. So if you've seen it before, enjoy again. But here is Sir Ken Robinson talking about a TED Talk about the changing educational paradigms. So here we go. This is the lecture drill test model of learning that's got to go. And the implications, though, are for worship in the same way, and that is, we do not have an attention span anymore in this generation, in this new world, that can sustain one linear sequence for an hour or whatever. It's got to be non-linear. It's got to move towards much more, and we got to hear this as negative, as positive, loopy. We hear loopy and it's negative. This is what the modern world did with circles. The modern world did not like a circle. This means what? Yeah. Or if I write in your margins, your reasoning here is circuitous. It's not a positive thing. We liked straight. We got to teach you to think.
Straight.
Yeah. You show me anything in nature that reveals that God thinks straight. Find me a straight line in nature. Find me a river that goes straight. Find me a bird that goes straight. But the modern world, this tyranny of the left brain, dictated a very sequential, consecutive, just like you read a page. And we created everything like that. And we even created worship like that. And so we got to find new ways of... you notice even when we did altar calls, same verse, everybody went to the same place to kneel at the same time and to say the same prayer. So there's this push towards this linear... sequential. We think sequential, not simultaneous. We think consecutive, not concurrent. We think linear, not linear. Suddenly we find ourselves in a world where, according to Mary Douglas, the number one anthropologist, who's done the best work, by the way, in priestly literature, where she argues that all ancient literature was written and meant to be written in a circle. all the way from Homer to the Bible. And we don't like circles. We're nervous around circles. The Bible begins in a garden, and it ends in a garden city. The Bible begins with a tree, it ends with a tree. To think in circles that, however, ascend, which is not a circle anymore, it's really a spiral, which is, by the way, the very symbol of DNA itself, the matrix of the very stuff of life. So part of the challenge is for us to change our metaphors. The Reformation was a change of metaphor. Metaphors got tired, worn out. Time to replace them. It's time now to replace some of these metaphors. The I tell my students I don't teach, I organize learning. You hear the difference? I tell them that the ultimate, I have to do a syllabus because it's required by the state. But I tell them if, and I don't teach a class, I teach a course. Because I don't like the metaphor of class. But I do like the metaphor of course, because a river takes its course. But it changes depending on everything that it encounters. And so I tell my students that in this syllabus, I've got a syllabus, and this is where it says we're going to end up. But if we end up where it says we're going to end up, it will have been a class, not a course, because you will not have shaped it by your participation. Your participation shapes the very content of this course, so that it's going to end up at a different place than I expected it to. And if it ends up where I expected it to, it is just that class. So we're talking about a different model of learning here. And I think the model of learning in the future is going to go in both directions at the same time, opposite. Getting a little predictable here right now, but one hand is going to get more digital, electronic, online. I teach online, but I teach in more of a game platform called Second Life. How many of you are familiar with this? Where all my students have avatars and they are present in a three-dimensional space online through these creatures that they create called avatars. They hear each other talk. They're from all over the world. We meet every week in this space. They talk to one another. They listen to each other. But what they see are their avatars. During the week, they're in chat rooms talking with one another with massive learning going on. It's called peer-to-peer learning. And that's where a lot of the learning takes place. But then, periodically, they come, a couple times a year, they meet face-to-face with me for intensive, more monastic experiences. In some ways like this. You eat together, except we start early in the morning, have breakfast together, and we end late at night, usually in a hot tub somewhere or in a sauna. During the day, we'll take hikes together, we'll go mountain climbing together, we'll go kayaking, we'll go whale watching, but everything we do in community. So there's a very strong communal nature to learning when we're together, FaceTime, the more Facebook, the more face-to-face. So it is, but they have more FaceTime with me in those couple of days than in a normal semester, where students dribble in a couple hours a week, sit in a chair, and watch the professor encase themselves in chalk for a couple hours. That will go down in history as one of the most ridiculous, and not in a good sense, ruinous, pedagogical models ever created by the human imagination. So we are right at the precipice of a very different learning model for the computers. And that's why I think the more we can integrate participation from outside the experience itself, I think the better off we'll be. I think the days of the megachurch are over, but I do think the satellite church has a future if it localizes zip codes, its branches. Let me just say one, what I mean by that. I come from a tribe called Methodists. We used to have tag team preaching. It's a function of the circuit rider, ride into town, and would preach the kind of exegetical sermon. They would then write out. Basically, it's write in, write out, check everything to make sure it's going okay. Sometimes they didn't even dismount from the horse. And those were called Sermons on the Mount. And circuit rider would come in, and I'm sorry, I got an appointment, and he's out of there. But then the tag team match occurred when you had what was called a local exhorter, or lay exhorter, or just exhorter. But this is a person who was kind of the local pastor. Could be female. A lot of female local exhorters. One of the worst things that ever happened for those circuit riders to dismount was then they kind of took over. And then they pushed back, laity, especially women. But when circuits were ramped up and running, this local exhorter then took that sermon and said, okay, John, this is what it means for you. Mary, did you get what he said today? And the altar call would be conducted by the local exhorter, the driving the message home. So preaching was a tag team act. And I see the possibility of this in the satellite method where you have the celebrity preacher who comes in, and increasingly they will come in holographically. Within a decade, they're going to be there in hologram. And so you will really not be able to tell whether it's actually them or not, because the holograms will be still there. But then you will have the local exhorter that will, this is what it means. Let's bring it home. John is what it means. Sue is what it means. We ready? Okay. I can keep going. Yeah, one more question, Keith, yeah.
You know, I've been watching, I told you, my oldest is 30, and my daughter 28, well-educated, etc., pretty representative of the generation. Lately, I hear him saying, I'm thinking about shutting down my Facebook. Yeah. And that's just kind of interesting to me, and I don't know, are you hearing that? What do you think, what's your reaction to that? I just find that kind of a paradigm shift, and I don't think it's just them growing old. It has to do with the media. Something's changing.
Well, they want, yeah, and my son did the same thing. My 22-year-old son did the same thing. He just shut down his Facebook just like a month ago. But because they want that relational richness,
yeah,
that's missing in that Facebook encounter. And they see that something's kind of artificial and phony. And especially if they have a phony experience of a Facebook phoniness, they just get disgusted and just shut it down. I mean, it took my son like 2 minutes to decide, I'm shutting down Facebook. I mean, all the things that he's posted and everything else, it's out here. I mean, it just didn't matter in a minute. So there is, and that's, I do think, that's why I think satellite churches will increase, but I think the real cutting edge future are these what I call artisanal churches, because I'm big on artisan cheese. So I call them artisan churches, low zip code churches, more pedestrian and parking lot, that are relationally rich, authentic, real. That's what my kids are really hungry for. But you will always have, I mean, basically, megachurch was a singles ministry. Yeah. And you'll always need a singles ministry. So,
did you say single or singles?
Singles. Where do Christians go to meet other Christians to court? Yeah. I think there's huge potential here. I mean, huge potential. I mean, you could have here today somebody who is, let me give an example, Hans Kuhn. Was he 87 now? He can't travel. But he could be here today. You could spend the afternoon with Hans Kuhn here today, how practically. Even though he's too weak and feeble to travel. So the potential here is huge. And this is, I mean, you need to hear me. This is on your watch. This is coming. I'm talking about 10 years. We've already got Andy Stanley's already experimenting with this. I mean, he's already got the video stuff down. The people there can't tell what venue he's at.
It's that clear.
That's the venue. That's not hologram. He can't tell what venue he's at.
That's a double one.
And that's the... Yeah. But there's no... he doesn't say where he's going to appear or what location. So he just shows up at location. And then the big question is, was he at this location or which location was that? Because it's that. His visage is that clear. And that's without the hologram. So, okay. Well, let's start at the beginning so everybody got a full thing of it. Okay. They do this on purpose, because this is the chalk and a blackboard. They're trying to.
It's very cool.
That's their. They have a logo, but their logo is a sign.
Every country on earth at the moment is reforming public education.
I love all the endos. And the, okay, we're going to break now. We're going to talk about this a little later when we come back.